Crackheads, it's Friday. Apologies for the technical difficulties, but we are here. It's a big weekend, a lovely time on tomorrow's card from Qatar. Number one contenders potentially to be decided in two divisions. Very exciting stuff. There's also a bit of boxing on that we'll talk about later. Obviously, the crack is known as the problem child of the Uncrowned Network. That's why I saw Jake doing the old presser there with my buddy Ariel Iwani. I said, you know, game recognized game, Jake Paul. I will stand aside. I will give you the mantle for just 1 hour, but then I'm back for the crackheads, and back I am. I'm very interested in this weekend's card. It's a nice continuation from the whole welterweight picture that we had last weekend. The lightweight title picture also in the frame with Armin and Dan Hooker. And I'll bring in the lads now because, lads, I don't know if you saw it, Mr. Ben Folks, Mr. Chuck Mendenhall, but things got a little bit heated over on the old weigh-ins there. A bit of headbutting, which I always feels.
You're doing so well.
Which I always feel like, you know, chums the water a bit, should I say, before these. Look at this. Armin saying, yeah, look at you. Oh, whoa. What was that? Can we get New York Rick on the ones and twos? Can we have another look at this headbutt? This Armin Sarukian character who's had a bit of history. Look at this. That's all down.
I mean, that's a not insignificant headbutt.
No, that's
right,
a big one.
And look, you can easily imagine when you do something like that, you could have very easily split open his eyebrow. Yeah. You could have opened a cut there. And then where would you be, Armin? You already had and lost a title shot when your back went out on you. Then you wind up in a fight like this, which is a potential top contender fight for you, maybe, depending on how things shake out. And you go and headbutt the guy at weigh-ins. What if he'd gotten a cut day before the fight and the fight's off? What an idiot you would have felt like then. How, like, I understand, you know, sometimes these guys get fired up. Armin's going to maybe punch somebody on the way to the cage if they get up in his face. Fine. But for God's sake, man, do just a little bit of caretaking of your own career. Just a little bit. Because you almost screwed it up for yourself again and for nothing.
He's just emerging from Dana White's doghouse, isn't he? I mean, like, the bottom line was he should already be in the title shot. And here he is, what is it, 19 months later, with his fight that's going to get him back there, supposedly. And then he goes and pulls that. I mean, that was not a good look. And if he had cut that open, I was just like what Ben did. We've seen this in the past where somebody comes out and does something stupid and compromises a fight. That was not a smart move. I appreciate the chumming of the water, like that aspect of it. Like, okay, well, if it didn't have juice, it does now, right? They have some bad blood, but man, that was not a smart move there by Sarukian.
Yeah, I mean, all of the points you guys just made, and not to mention the fact that there is a really compelling dude there with floppy blonde hair that a lot of people want to see in this title picture anyway. Imagine, like, Armin goes in and does a great job against Hooker, hypothetically. Dana at the press conference, look, man, we can't trust this guy. See what he did that way in? We can't do that with a title shot. Our first gig on Paramount, we're going to let this guy come in? This guy that pulled out when we gave him a title shot before? He's starting to headbutt guys now? That was fucking crazy. What a crazy move. Flipping crazy. Sorry, I'm trying to correct the language. I'm using too much dirty words. I'm upsetting a lot of people. So I'm just really flipping angry with Armin and how he carried himself here. A lot of decorum. Let's have a quick look at this. Between a certain Irishman and Bilal Muhammad, not as he carries himself on the big stage, just Ian Machado, Gary. Can we have a look at those two boys? Oh, yeah, look at this. They're saying horrible things to each other. I will admit that much. But Bilal, you know, he's given a lot of, we'll see tomorrow. Ian Machado, Gary, not one that's ever been afraid to back himself. But he is ready to go. We'll be talking about him later on too. But they are your two big fights on a very, very nice card, which is starting at a very, very nice time.
You like it.
For the Europeans over here. Chuck, I want to ask you. Armin, if he goes in and he smokes Dan Hooker, are they going to push the baddie out of the picture? Are they going to push our Liverpudlian brother out of the picture that he rightfully deserves a shot at the lightweight title?
Well, first of all, does this thing overlap? We got a big football game tomorrow. And if
you're
this
damn
card
right,
is, yeah, we've got a big football game going on. We're buzzing in Bozeman right now. We got Montana State coming in for it all, baby, and it's going to be something big. So I don't know if these are going to overlap or not.
They will. They will. And I mean, and don't worry, I've already worked out a plan for how I'm going to manage that, because
this is what Ben's wearing a hat, by the way. This is the Grizz. Yeah. We've referred to the Grizz many times. Please take it away, Ben. What's happening?
Go Grizz.
Division two?
Pete, I swear to God.
He's going to warm your ass.
I've told you about this before, Pete. FCS football, Division 1AA, as they used to call it. The most exciting division in college football, obviously, because we got a real playoff system here. But I believe the main card for this one in Qatar starts at 10 a.m. here in the Mountain Time Zone. You know, you get through
the only
a couple hours.
Zone, by the way.
The one true time zone. And then, so it's going to be around noon, 1 o'clock by the time we get to the really good stuff. We got a noon kickoff here for the one, I believe the 124th edition of the Brawl of the Wild. And this is a big one. This is the biggest one it's ever been. Number 2, Montana versus number 3, Montana State. It's already a huge rivalry game. And this time, you know, Montana is undefeated on the season. Montana State lost a couple early on, undefeated in the conference. The winner here will go into the playoffs as the second seed, most likely get a home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And, by the way, get the added advantage of being on the opposite side of the bracket of the North Dakota State Bison, who are looking kind of scary this year,
honestly.
So, yeah, we got a big one here.
Yeah.
The whole town is just absolutely on the edge of its seat. The most expensive average ticket price for all of college football this season, I've been told. We looked at, me and my co-main event podcasting co-host Chad Dundas looked at getting tickets, and about $320 to get in the door down there. So we're going to watch this one at home. Going to have the fights on the laptop. Going to have the game on the TV, going to have the nachos on the coffee table, and my children have already been told that during that time period, whatever you need, you're going to have to take care of yourself, because do not bother me.
Pizza, that's my long way of saying that, no, they can't push Patty aside for this fight. And I'll tell you, part of it is because he's there. I mean, like, he's pretty much part of this whole fight package, even though he's not partaking in the actual fighting, but he's got a couple of his guys there. It's kind of good timing for him, isn't it? Like, because he's out there, he's, you know, I'm seeing interviews with him. I think him and Taporia kind of got into a little bit of a mix-up there. This is perfect for him. They're planting the seeds. I've contended all along that, especially with this Paramount Plus, you know, kickoff coming up, that's the fight to make. I don't know if what Sarukian, like, so, we'll see how things kind of, how things play out here, but I'm not sure, unless it's a completely emphatic victory and he handles the microphone and all that, like that he just kind of takes that spot. I do think that he probably injured himself a little bit, and not physically, but his status with this thing he did. I honestly, we're kind of making a little bit of light of it, but this is a guy who has rubbed the UFC the wrong way, obviously, and I don't know if that will improve. We'll see. I mean, like, we have short memories in this game. If he goes in there and smokes Hooker, who knows? Like, it could be him. But I like the fact that Patty's right there. I don't think that you can push him aside for this one.
What do you reckon, Ben? Do you think Armin, like, you know, meritocracy and all that? Do you still believe in it, or is it dead?
Well, meritocracy. air quotes fancy, around meritocracy word. These days. The problem with doing all this stuff, if you're Armin, like pulling out of the title fight, going out there, headbutting the guy in the weigh-ins, you can get away with that stuff if you have a strong fan base. If there's a whole lot of people behind you, they absolutely want to see you fight for the title. If you're the kind of fighter where when Dana White shows up to press conferences at unrelated events, people are going to be like, fans are going to be getting on the mic and being like, when is Armin Sarukian getting his title shot? I don't think he's there. I don't hear a whole lot of people riding the Armin Sarukian bandwagon talking about how either he gets the next title shot or we riot. He doesn't really have that. Maybe he could still get it. Maybe at this point, the best you could do is go full heel and just be like, Armin Sarukian is the guy you love to hate. I don't know. He doesn't seem to have a ton of fan support. And I agree with you that going into the first phase of this Paramount deal is a factor for something like this, because the UFC has established a pretty clear pattern with broadcast partners, right? Like, every broadcast deal starts off great. Everybody's so excited to be working together. Can't believe it. Unbelievable partners. We're going to do great big things together. By the end of those broadcast deals, maybe everybody is a little sick of each other and not quite so enthusiastic about things. We've seen that. But at the start, USC really tries to put out the best stuff that it absolutely can. And so if you're looking for something that's really going to help out Paramount, it's going to drive subscribers, really get them to see you as a pickup that's worth the considerable price tag that they paid to get the UFC rights, you want to go with something that's big and loud and splashy. You're not concerned about the meritocracy element at that point. You're not. It doesn't have to be number one versus number two. And Patty Bilmer's a guy where he brings some fans with him. And you know, you put those two guys at a press conference together, you put them in ads together, he's going to help you sell that fight. Armin Sarukian, maybe not so much. So I think Patty's kind of got the inside track here.
I think New York Rick is doing everything to control his shaking right now on those controls. This is a guy who has protected Sarukian in his top 10 pound for pound the whole time. All 19 months he's had him in there. So but the meritocracy is dying here.
Rick always good for an outside pick. He had Marab in his top 10 before anyone did, in fairness to him. And on that note, we will kick Rick into action here because you know who's not concerned about Armin Sarukian at all? Well, it's that guy we're talking about from Liverpool with the floppy blonde hair. Here's Paddy the Batty Bimblett talking about him and Ilya's potential matchup.
You know, don't ever want to say a bad word about Justin Gaethje, that because he's a legend, but he's doing interviews lately being a proper you know what I mean? Saying like the UFC owe him and he deserves it and all that. No one's holding on. You know what I mean? You fight for it. And my last win, I beat someone in a better fashion who was a higher ranked opponent than he won in his last fight. So I know he's a legend and obviously he's done a lot for the company and all that, but you kind of just demand a title shot. Then you've got Armin who hasn't fought in, it'll be what, 18 months or something like that. So, you know, me and Taporia has got the storyline built in. It's all there. It's half nice for me that he won the belt, even though I don't like him. I'd rather him not be a two-division champ. It's better for me that he won the belt because if Charles would have won, then I definitely would have had to fight someone else first. You know what I mean? But with Ilya having the belt, it's just a storyline's already set up. It's all ready to go. Exactly. So I don't know. I don't understand why it's not announced and why it's not already made and written in a contract. But we'll see what happens over the next few weeks.
Do you think, Ben, that it has anything to do with like this idea that we're all kind of sitting around waiting for Paddy and Ilya to be announced? Is it anything to do with like taking the shine completely off this card if they had announced it beforehand? You know, like, oh, Paddy's fighting Ilya. Armin, you're fighting Hooker for, you know, something?
Yeah, that could be. You never know. Sometimes these days with UFC, it seems like they are not that concerned with getting us at all excited for anything but the numbered events. You know, when it comes to fight night stuff, they're just kind of like, I don't know, it's on. If you want to watch it, it's there. You know, this one seems like a little bit of a different one. So maybe they would hold off for this one because it's like, okay, we're going over there to Qatar. We're doing one of these things where we're trying to move into different markets, especially if they're paying us just to bring the cage over there. And it's, as fight night lineups go, one of the better ones that we've seen all year. So I could see if maybe you're just like, yeah, it would take the steam out of this to basically tell those guys, you are fighting to not fall any further from the title shot. But other than that, you know, you got at least a 6 to 9 month wait ahead of you.
Is there any hope of a Dan Hooker upset here, Chuck? Are we writing off the Australian too much here? I mean, sorry, geez, New Zealander. Yeah. He's Kiwi, right? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Are we completely writing him out of this occasion, despite him seeming to at least get under Armin's skin to the point where he's headbutting him at a weigh-in?
I mean, we're always sleeping on him in a certain way. I actually think that he's been a lot more dangerous since he's kind of said, like, go ahead, make me the underdog, throw me into these fights that I have no chance in. He was minus 400 for Gamrot the last fight.
Yeah.
Gamrot was supposed to roll over him too. He didn't do that. It was a split decision. The previous fight against Turner, it was minus 300. He was a huge underdog in that one. So Turner was supposed to beat him. This is like the exact terrain that he's used to existing in at this point. But I feel like he's kind of fighting the best he's fought, maybe with just kind of the kind of loosened expectations. He's like, why not? I can just kind of fight this the style that I want to fight, and there's no real pressure on me to go out there and try to dethrone these guys. So he's a live dog, man, in my mind, especially you take into consideration the context of the, what is it, 18, 19 months since Sarukian is in there. Some people believe it's a myth, but like the whole cage rust thing, but like, it certainly factors in. That's a long time to not be competitive And you don't know, like, if it might take a round or two, if it goes like a five-round type fight for him to get his footing, for Sarukyan to get his footing. But I do know one thing, Hooker will be bringing it the whole time. So, you know, the beginning of that fight might tell us a lot too. But I look at Hooker, man, the same way. I think he's playing on house money and he's having a good time. You could see it in the press conference. And, dude, there's really no more dangerous version than that of him.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Gamrot comparison is a good point because he should not have beat Mateusz Gamrot. On paper, if you look at that matchup,
I still can't believe it happened.
He should lose that fight. And on paper, he should lose this one against Armin Sarukyan. Armin Sarukyan has the style and the skills to go out there, make it the kind of fight Dan Hooker doesn't want to be in and win, you know, either late or win a decision. That's what should happen. But Dan Hooker has found that ability to drag you into his kind of fight, especially if you're out here headbutting him at the weigh-ins or suggesting that, you know, maybe you're a little fired up and maybe emotion might play into it. Like, that's what he wants. That's you're on his territory there. And I think he's kind of found a sweet spot for himself there where if he can get you in these fights, and he said something along these lines where he's just like, you know, yeah, you can have all these skills, but you're going to go in there and get in a fist fight with me, and you can never count me out in a fist fight. Yeah. That's what he kind of managed to do against Mateusz Gamrot, and I think that there's a chance, at least. When I saw the odds, how big an underdog he was here, I thought, that's tilted way too far. I can see why Sarukyan should win this fight, but Dan Hooker has the exact right mindset and ability to go out there and win the kind of fights that he should not win.
He's kind of sadistic, too. You see him take that headbutt, and the first thing he thinks is to, like,
I love
smile
it.
All big. Yeah. I know, I love it. And he does this in the fights all the time, too. Starts bleeding. As soon as it turns into some kind of, like, you know, public brutality, it feels like he's right at home sloshing around in the blood. You know, like, he loves it.
Yeah. Well, I talked to him about that after that Mateusz Gamrot fight, because he had that moment between rounds, right, where he's cut open, he's bleeding, and it's just been a wild round, and he was talking to his corner, and he was just smiling, and he was just like, I love this shit, man, like, during the fight, and he was saying how it took him a while to get there, that earlier in his career, you know, you're so stressed out, you're thinking about what's the best path to victory for me, like, how do I not screw this up, and you're not enjoying any of it, and he said he got to a point, after coming back from an injury layoff, where he was just like, you sort of realize how this could go away. You realize that it's a privilege to be healthy enough and have the opportunity to go out there and get in these kind of fights and have this experience. And you really enjoy it a lot more. And I felt like he became a more dangerous individual when he learned how to enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, if the world has been talking about a potential matchup between Paddy and Ilya, someone forgot to tell Dan Hooker, who responded to these claims at the press conference during the week.
Just wondering if you've seen the latest updates to the rankings that they were published yesterday, and if you have, what are your thoughts about that?
I didn't see it. What was it?
Well, there's some certain changes. Paddy Pimblett is not right now in top five.
Fuck this. Hell.
Not sure.
Nah, they must be giving him a title shot, eh? They must be cherry picking him a title shot. Nah, fuck. It is what it is.
He's a fucking savage. I love him. Yeah. It's fair to say that Armin, though, out of all these guys, like, to Rick's rankings, a nod to them, he is the toughest matchup for Ilya, right? Like, if you could pick one of these guys, Chuck, it would be Armin as far as a guy to dethrone him, right?
I mean, in terms of going into a fight, like casting doubt on, okay, is this going to be competitive or not?
Take Islam out of the equation too, obviously, because he's gone up, right?
Yeah. I mean, that would be the one. Like, I think that you would look at that and be like, oh, this is not a cakewalk. Like, I wouldn't see it that way. Whereas I think there'd be a pretty big sentiment that Paddy Pimblett would be that proverbial stake being slid under the door for the champ a little bit. I don't think that would be the case with Armin. So I think if you're looking at strictly from a, how's it going to be perceived in the lead up, and actually maybe the way it plays out, I think Armin definitely presents the bigger challenge there.
You agree, Ben?
Yeah, but I also think Ilya beats all these guys right now.
Yeah.
I think that Armin comes in and presents a little bit of a different question there, you know, just because you go, all right, here's a guy who's a bit of a powerhouse who can take you down, who can mess you up on the floor, and who can really control the pace of a fight. But you've seen Ilya against some of those type guys before. I think people, they don't realize that he actually does have good defensive wrestling, and his mastery of distance is just seems to be kind of preternatural, and his power, those kind of things, I think, change a fight so quickly when you have to stand across from him. I think that there's not anybody right now in the lightweight rankings, unless Islam Makhachev comes home, who presents a really stiff challenge for him.
Can I ask you a quick aside? Like, in term, you guys have been following the game a long time, but like, there was that moment in time when we had Anderson Silva, there was John Jones, GSP. They were all guys who are sort of like, it was hard to imagine any of them losing at one point. Like, it's just like, I don't know who's going to, they'd have to beat, one of them would have to beat the other, you know? Isn't this the closest we've come? Like, you keep mentioning, like, when you mentioned that, like, Ilya, yeah. And I'm like, I agree with you. And it's almost the same with Khamzat, right? You're like, I don't know. I don't know if any of these dudes can beat Khamzat.
Merab.
You know, Merab. You're like, I don't know if anybody can beat Merab. I don't remember a time. That was the closest we've come was back then. There was maybe three or four type guys. We have, like, five guys in our top five right now that have that feel to them. Like, I don't know who
Pantoja
beats these guys.
Pantoja, too, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. It's a very good point. Like, you never really feel like, you never really think about these things when you're in the moment, right? It's only when you're removed from them, you look back and you're like, holy shit. Obviously, we have that picture of all the champions up there from back in the day. It's so iconic.
Oh, yeah.
They're all like amazing champions, but it's a good point, Ben, right? Like, there is a shitload of champions where you're like, I don't know who the fuck is going to knock this boy off.
Yeah, I also think, though, that we get excited in this sport. You know, some we get a new champion, he looks dominant in a fight, and we go, his reign will last 1,000 years. You know, we sometimes do that. And when we haven't seen all the different stylistic matchups that can come along. I also think that one thing we've learned over the years, it is damn hard to stay a champion for a long time. And I remember Demetrius Johnson talking about this. I believe in, you know, our beloved editor and fearless leader, Shaheen Ashadi, used to do a series for, when we worked at The Athletic, where he would ask fighters about what they thought were like their five most memorable, their signature performances. And Demetrius Johnson was talking about one that really stood out for him, which is one of the title defenses. I can't remember exactly which one it was, but it was not one of the ones that other people would have pointed out and been like, that was a big fight for me. It just felt like another title defense. But he was saying, you know, that one, I just wasn't feeling it. Had a rough weight cut. My body didn't feel great. Didn't feel great in the fight and had to gut it out and get it done. And if you're trying to stay a champion for that long, everybody you fight, it's the biggest night of their life. It's the chance to make all their dreams come true. And for you, you have to win just to stay where you are. They are trying to win, to ascend to a new level. You are just trying to stay there. And it's really, really hard to do that, to stay at that level for a long time, especially because it's like the increased pressures, increased attention. Mm-hmm. Everybody is studying you. Everybody is planning for how they're going to beat you specifically. And I think that we underestimate that sometimes. We see a guy who comes up, gets the belt, and we think like, all right, that like he's just a robot and each fight is just another fight. It's really tough to stay there.
It's tough to get up at 5 a.m. and do road work when you're sleeping in silk pajamas, Ben.
Wow, I've never heard that line before.
Yeah, what? I can't believe I came up with
that's
amazing.
Pizzi's doing the road work, though. Pizzi's out there. Even in the cold of Dublin, Pizzi's doing the road work.
Shaving his ass.
Yeah, I mean, can we get into the chafe ass now, or should we leave it till later? I mean, no, I'm happy to speak.
Now you should leave it for later. Now people will absolutely stay tuned because they want to hear about how Pizzi had a problem when he went out there on a run.
All of your segue work, you just got the perfect segue, and now you're chafing me. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead, man. Go ahead. You come back to that. But put a bookmark in that, though.
I'm going
to
write it down here.
Yes, okay.
Ass chafe.
Don't forget the wrestling story.
Yeah. Well, it's a point. You know, we're speaking about champions. There's a new champion at 170 pounds. His name is Islam Makhachev, and a lot of lads want to fight him for some reason. I watched the fight last weekend, and I was like, why are all of these guys so excited about trying to beat this dude?
You're saying you've decided not to fight Islam Makhachev? Yeah, is that what you're saying?
I'm ruling myself
Smart
out.
Move.
Okay.
I'm ruling myself out of title contention. One man who is not doing that, a man from the same neck of the woods as myself, Ian Machado Gary. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a guy put a foot forward in a better way. This dude arrived in Qatar. We're all jazzed up on Morales and Pratches. This guy is honestly like a diplomat. I watched him at the open workouts in full Qatari garb. Let's have a look at this, please, Rick. Amazing stuff here from Ian Gary, who is firmly putting himself in the title conversation. Look at this. Oh, we don't have a
second. Why does he look like he's 8 foot? It's like a Dark Ministry. He's like...
Like
he is very tall. He's very tall.
Yeah, he looks. That's your sleep paralysis demon right there, standing in the doorway of your bedroom at 3 a.m.
You can't hear him, but he's speaking very diligently, and you know he's giving it the full one. He sounds like a politician, to be fair to him. He has said, and he said this from miles off, like when Bilal and him was first announced, this is before Morales splattered Sean Brady and Pratchett did the same with Leon Edwards. Like, he's like, I need to finish this guy. And obviously that's one of the criticisms of Gary, right? Like in this age of we need spectacular stoppages, he's been getting some decisions back to back, even though he started off his UFC tenure as a knockout artist and had been the whole way up through Cage Warriors and everything. Ben, do you think that is accurate? Do you think he needs a finish, or is a win good enough given the media attraction that Ian Gary has had? Like, if you're looking up the videos here, he's being viewed more than anyone else. Does he still need that finish in your mind?
You know, I think we sometimes think mistakenly think of it as a binary thing where either you finish the fight or it wasn't that great. And there are plenty of performances where we've seen where somebody has a great fight. Some of our favorite fights, if you tell people about what are the best fights in MMA or UFC history, some of the best fights went to decision.
Yeah.
So you can go out there and have a star-making performance, win a huge fight, and it can go to decision if it's the right kind of fight. So I don't think a finish is absolutely required. However, for Ian Gary, this kind of thing, when he does win these decisions, they are often not that exciting to watch. That's the thing. It's not just that the judges came in there and had to decide it in the end. It's that a lot of people did not enjoy the road there. And he has all the other pieces where, I mean, for one thing, where he's a good fighter, he's a smart fighter, he talks a really good game, he does an excellent job of keeping himself in the conversation all the time.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, he's like the anti-Armin in that kind of way. Yeah. So you got to give him credit for that, but you do need to be able to go out there and do something that's really going to feel like it puts a stamp on it. Bilal's not an easy guy to finish, though. If you go out there and you're taking chances in order to try to finish him, that's a guy who can beat you that way. So if you go out there and you can dominate him, but you can also make it a fun fight to watch, I think that might be enough. But I also think that this is kind of a sneaky, tough fight. I think a lot of people are looking at Bilal right now and being like, how much does Bilal have in the tank? Was the loss to JDM a bad night, bad stylistic matchup, or was it the sign of a decline that you got to the title, but just as your skills were beginning to desert you, just as the miles on the odometer were starting to catch up to you? I think that's kind of what we're looking at here.
Well, we actually had Bilal spoke to the great Chuck Mendenhall here, so he might have a better insight than all of us. It does feel like, you know, despite Bilal, like, Ian hasn't fought a guy like Bilal. He hasn't fought an out-and-out wrestler. Like, this is the thing that mostly, when you come over from Europe, this is the thing that everyone's talking about. What's he going to look like when he faces a wrestler? We saw it with Leon Edwards in Manchester. I saw it at 6 a.m. in Manchester. I will never forget it. Chuck, what did you take from him? Like, should we be more excited about Bilal here as the dog?
No, probably not. But like his, yeah. I do think he has like a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. And I'm never sure if you talk to Bilal before, because you're never 100% sure if it's just like he's kind of pissed off in general at the way things are in the world, or if it's like that he's thinking about his perception. One of the things I asked him was when he watches, you know, JDM get taken down and controlled for 19 minutes, and you look back at his fight, like, do you think maybe you should have done that a little more? Like, should you have focused a little harder on just trying to get him on his back and, like, keeping him there? And that was the one time it was a little abrasive where I felt like he was like, you know, for people who don't know what they're, you know, who aren't in there, they don't know anything about this, you know, that sort of response. There's a chip on his shoulder, but you got to remember the dude is 37 years old and he has fought a who's who, and he's kind of been to the mountaintop. There's always, you mentioned this before, Ben, like a complacency. And I don't know, I wouldn't quite say something like that, but it's definitely harder and harder to keep your hunger at the level that, you know, made you unbeatable for whatever 11 fights in a row. It's difficult to kind of keep showing up and doing that, especially when, you know, your nickname is Remember the Name, and like you've literally spent your whole career like, hey guys, remember me, you know, like you've spent your whole career.
Look over here.
Yeah. And if anybody's going to style on this moment and should or could, it would be Ian Gary, who maybe in part because he hasn't shined a big shining moment like this, if you're able to go put away, you know, Bilal Muhammad in a big spot like this, could really go over big, especially given that I think Ian is now kind of fostered, and we used to have this conversation all the time, kind of a more of a goodwill with his fan base, because there for a while we thought he was one of the more polarizing figures. But what he's shown is that he understands that shaping perception in the fight game is everything, right? Like, he can be this one day, he can be this the next, he can show up this, and he can play a heel, and he can do all of this. I think if he's ever going to put it all together, this would be the moment, and it would, this would, in my mind, make it emphatic that he should be next for the title shot.
Yeah, I think you brought up a good point there that, well, I mean, for one thing, him being 37 and fighting a guy who is almost 10 years younger than him, Ian Garry, and he spent so much getting to the title. You know, he was not one of these guys where people were looking for an excuse to give him a title shot. He had to put in so much just blood and guts to get there, to win the title. And sometimes we've seen guys where it's like, spent the best stuff you had just getting there. And then there's not a whole lot left in the tank for staying there or for bouncing back and getting back in that title picture. So I think that is one concern. I also think I can understand how when he gets asked, I'm sure he got asked a few times in this, and I'm sure he heard from a lot of people who wanted to offer some thoughts about his game plan against Jack Della Maddalena in that title fight. I remember talking to two fighters about this. Like, Brian Stan was telling me once where he was like, I lost to Chael Sonnen, and I went in for a haircut the next week, and my barber had thoughts about what I should have done in that fight. And it was all I could do to sit there and be polite and not be like, hey, get the clippers out. Do your job. Don't tell me how to do my job. You know, he was just like, everybody has an opinion on it, and you get really sick of hearing it. So I can understand that Bilal might feel a little bit abrasive about that. I also wonder how that translates into a fight like this, because Ian Garry is a guy who's, he can get under your skin. You know, even if you don't have some of that going on.
I've noticed that. Yeah.
He can needle a fella. And so I wonder how that might affect Bilal's approach here.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, you're mentioning the age there. Beside Garry, he just looks so much older because Gary's so youthful, right? Like, he's so wide-eyed and enthusiastic about everything he's doing. You know what I mean? Like, he's buzzing about it all.
Typical Brazilian. He hides his age, man.
He's also, I still think he is polarizing, but one thing he's realized is, like, all these people are watching me anyway. Like, so, if they're here, I have a captive audience. Whether they're here to shit on me or whatever they want to do, I have a captive audience, and I can mold them into whatever I think, whatever he's trying to put forward. And look, we saw this with the Shavkat thing. He loses the Shavkat, and he's like, look how well I lost to Shavkat. Like, he's very good at, like,
manipulating the situation. And redirects it to, like, hey, at least I took him on. Well, you other guys don't want to fight him, you know?
Well, and, I mean, there is something to having this moment and this platform kind of to yourself in a way, you know, because he really got, this is a good lineup overall for a fight night event, but really, you got Dan Hooker and Armin, and you got Bilal and Ian Garry, and those are the main attractions. And when you are slotted in on a pay-per-view event where we got the title fight, we got some other contender fights down here, there's a lot going on. It just feels like a lot jammed into people's heads all at once. And here you kind of got it to yourself. Now, obviously, you're going to lose a lot of viewers to the Grizz-Cat game. A lot of people are going to be watching that one on ESPN+. That's a given. But you do have an opportunity here to have a bigger share of the spotlight, even if it's a little bit smaller of a spotlight.
I'm going to have to fucking try and find this game tomorrow. I'm going to be scouring the European sports channels. Who's showing Montana versus Montana State? Come on, you motherfuckers.
You know, when I lived in New York City, there was one bar that you could go to, and that was where all the Montana and Montana State alumni would gather for the Brawl of the Wild each year. And it was a big deal. So maybe Dublin has something like that, maybe, where you can get some, find out who among you got their degree at one of the Montana universities, and you can go down there. I'll give you some tips on how you can just, like, drop the right buzzwords and blend in. They won't know.
I would love that. I need to.
You'd be like, I did a semester abroad in Missoula. Yeah, it was great.
My uncle's from Boots.
Oh, God damn it.
Boots?
It's over.
Damn, fuck. Oh, I was trying. I thought it was my moment.
You had it.
Yeah, listen.
Boot. You don't want to be there anyway, man. That's the armpit of Montana, isn't it, Ben? Like,
oh no, Butte is great. It's one of those weird towns where it's like, you know how some towns have this thing where they're like, we used to do a thing, and that thing defined our entire existence.
It's a mining place, right?
Yeah, and now they're like, we don't really do it anymore, but we still have that that in us.
It still carries an odor, doesn't it?
We're like, still tough. There, like... Oh, we got a Superfund site out there in Butte because of all the mining. But there's still, people are very proud to be from Butte. Butte has very much its own character. You could go have a good time in Butte, and you could also wake up in a holding cell in Butte and know that you deserved it.
Holy shit. Chuck, do you hear this guy earlier saying there's only 2 points in this card? He mustn't know that Waldo Cortez Acosta.
Yeah, look at him stepping back in there.
You know what I mean? The Ipo gate fresh behind him. The man who prevailed where Aspinall could not is fighting one of GC's favorites, Goatsyev, Shamil Gaziev. I mean...
Yeah.
Is this a low-key, like, contention run here that Waldo Cortez Acosta is
on? It's a November to Remember, Petey, right? Like, so he's jumping right back in there.
It doesn't take that much at heavyweight these days, man.
Whoa, you know, whoa. The man was, he had one eye, okay? He had one eye. He could have been, he was about to be taken out the back and they're going to put a round in him, but instead he fought and he beat D'Elia, a friend of Tom Aspinall's, and now he is the IPO king. You cannot poke that man's eyes into submission.
I really love how he got, you know, poked in the eye and we're walking around holding one eye shut and we're holding the cloth to it and everything. Then we restart the fight and he's fine. Lands that shot, drops Anthony D'Elia, finishes him off with strikes. And then immediately afterwards, we're back to one eye shut, yelling in pain about it. Like immediately afterwards.
That's compartmentalizing, Ben. He's
like, yeah. He was just like, I'll worry about how bad my eye hurts and how I can't see out of it as soon as the fight is over. But until then, there's still business to be done. And honestly, it does not take a whole lot at heavyweight in general, but also in this current moment, if you can just get us to remember who you are and get us to have something
remember
in our heads.
Name.
If you can get us to remember the name, but also to know some kind of narrative about you, where we go, Waldo Cortez Acosta, which one is he? Oh, he's the guy who had that weird eye poke fight where he seemed to have lost and then came back and immediately won. And then he's also the guy who 3 weeks later jumped in to save a heavyweight fight, got on a plane to Qatar like 2 or 3 days before the fight, and went
and
win that one.
I mean, that's
no,
like...
it's not. It's a long ass flight, man. And to go fight, you know, a guy from the region. And he's already, I think Waldo Cortez Acosta sitting at, what, number 6 in the UFC's
somewhere.
Heavyweight rankings at this point.
Somewhere.
So
somewhere.
You go in there, you win 2 fights in November. That don't hurt, you know, especially you got other people like Jailton Almeida, what seemed to be like he was going to be next up. And then that ain't happening anymore. So there's an opportunity there for a guy to make a name for himself.
What do you guys know about this Shimrock? I mean, this kid's coming in 7 years on the lam. What's going on over there, Petey?
Yeah, so like he was up on like, I think it was a burglary charge or something like that. And then he just went on the lam. Like he was over here for a while fighting in Dublin Combat Academy. And I think, I don't know what happened. Like he either didn't do it or they didn't have sufficient evidence. So then they just let him off. I was hoping to organize a chit chat between himself and a certain
I really wanted
rider.
To talk to him. I mean, you hear 7 years on the lam. Yeah, and that speaks to me. I'm like, let's talk to that guy.
Honestly, I that sounds to me like an inspiration because you're telling me he ran from his problems and it worked out. Like that's
so
that's my
that's
dream.
What I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So you're thinking like a writer now.
he just ignored it, went away, and was just like, eventually the debt collectors from the urgent care will stop calling me, and it'll all be fine. And it worked. Like that's my approach to most things.
They were like, the police were like, I can't remember how this worked out, but I know I saw him do an interview with TNT where he was like, I was wrongly accused of doing this. And obviously he went on the lam then, wasted a lot of time, 7 years. I mean, Jesus, they could have figured this out a bit quicker if you ask me. But interestingly, like he was a big deal over here. He fought in Octagon, that crazy Eastern European promotion they're doing all the stadium shows. And he developed a great fan base. He is with Paddy the Baddy. And you'll remember historically, like this happened with McGregor as well. Remember kind of opened the floodgates for a lot of fighters to come in. And we see that on this card with Luke Roy, who's a shit hot prospect. He was on Cage Warriors, a knockout artist, a bit different than Paddy in that regard. Much more of a stand-up fighter. He's making his debut and Shamrock is making his debut. But I thought it was interesting the way they've matched Shem because he's he's a really difficult matchup here. Like Aliyev, isn't it, that he's fighting? Like he is a shit hot prospect. Yeah. Undefeated, 10-0, like really
and young, right? Like a young dude,
24.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, fuck, man, this is a really difficult fight to look good in because Chem is like a submission artist, and this guy's a wrestler, so damn.
Yeah.
Shit hot, he says.
Shit hot.
That's what we're saying, shit hot. I mean, I know all about shit hot, but stay to the end of the show. Just to hear that one.
Keep that dangling carrot dangling.
Yeah. Kyoji Haraguchi, like, not even a word about him this week, I feel.
It's
I feel
crazy, like, man.
Not even crazy. A fucking whisper about Kyoji coming back. What is the story with that, boys?
I don't know, but that's still... I was at that title fight that he had where it was like 1 second left on the clock, and I'll never forget that. I mean, that was one of those fights you're like, damn, man, I was there for that. So I'm excited to see him back, man. I mean, this card is really good. Like, generally speaking, this card is really good from top to bottom. Not maybe not to the bottom, but I mean, there are a lot of good fights on this card.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, and you think about Horiguchi, I mean, he hasn't lost since those... Like, he lost back-to-back ones there in Bellator, but that was like 3-4 years ago. Hasn't lost since then. 35 years old, so you're getting to the point where, especially in those lightweight divisions, we expect to see a little bit of decline, but hasn't happened yet.
Nick Gorobai, come on, man. That guy. Yeah,
he's a big underdog as well, dude. Like, it's...
No, he's a favorite, right? Isn't
Kyoji's,
he the favorite?
Kyoji's the underdog.
No, I'm talking about Oralby.
Oh, shit, okay.
Yeah, with Hermanson.
Hermanson moving down as well. I mean, yeah, this like down. I don't like that when lads are like towards the end of their career and they make the move down. That's when I'm like, this is quite weird. I know it worked out for Aldo, but I don't know, dude.
I know he's the one exception though that you can think of just like that. Mostly it does not work out.
I don't like it. Right, lads, I need to talk to you about a press conference, because the reason why we started an hour later, and look, Ben was all over this. Ben sending me every 2 minutes. Wow, see the way Joshua looked when he came out there?
He was reading a lot into it.
Well, he really is a problem, this Jake Paul. These are the messages I'm getting off. Look, Ben, save it for the show, mate. Look, I know you're excited.
My approach to press conferences in general is Twitter will let me know. They'll let me. I don't need to sit through all of it, because there is a lot of bullshit that you have to sit through watching a fight sports press conference. You know, somebody else is going to clip out the relevant moments. I'll get to watch it in a series of 30 to 90 second videos. And I'll get all caught up. I'm not worried about that at all. I think, honestly, they should be thanking us. The Crack is such a popular Friday morning show that we really would have killed viewership and attention for this press conference if we had gone on our normal time. We felt it was only right to step aside, to let them have some crumbs of attention, because otherwise, man, you can't compete
in
the Crack.
In the way that Montana State and Montana will cut into the UFC this week, and that is true. That is a true example here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. The shorthand for the Crack around the office is Problem Pod, because we are the problem child. That's what they call us.
Problem Pod.
Yeah. Here's the thing. We might have a face-off. I believe New York Rick diligently has clipped. Look at the fucking...
Jesus.
Damn, dude.
Jesus.
That is
what an opposite visual from the Tank Davis one, right?
Yeah.
It's the exact opposite.
Crazy. I mean,
yeah, look at that.
He is fighting a guy.
What about Rick? This is incredible.
That's nuts, man.
It's you go from like 5'5 Tank Davis to like 6'6 Anthony Joshua. You are dealing with like a foot
it's
difference
like,
in height.
It's
at
like
that
Tank
point.
Davis's bodyguard just showed up, like, hey, you messing with my boy?
It is fucking wild. Damn. And look, I know TalkSport in the UK have been like, this is a travesty. This is a travesty. And I'm like, I'm fucking excited for this. I am buzzing for it. And look, shout out to Ariel Helwani. To Ben's point, that is how press conferences usually go. Ariel wasn't fucking around today. He came out on the stage. He was like, let's go. Right, bring them out. We don't need to do this shit.
That's because he shares our attitude towards them. He's actually trying to correct it.
Yeah, he does. They need to bring him into this boxing space way more often. Do you remember? They used to go through all of the fucking dudes who are sponsoring things and everything like
that. That's a crazy visual right there, man.
Man, Anthony Joshua is happier than a pig in shit up there. He's laughing. He's like, Jake Paul says something. He's like, oh, yeah, I don't want to have to do what I'm going to have to do to Anthony. And they cut to Anthony. He's just like, okay, yeah, no problem. I'm taking this really seriously. I mean, we're all so fucking worried. Am I a sick fuck? Like, come on, Ben. I know.
There is
a press conference.
There is something exciting about this kind of matchup. It kind of feels like a little bit of a pros versus Joes scenario. Remember that show
yes,
that was
I
on
do,
Spike
yeah.
TV, and they would get like, you know, a guy like Jerome Bettis or something. Yeah, he hasn't played football in a few years, so he's going to come out here against a guy who thought he was pretty good in high school. And there is something rewarding as a sports fan to just see and be reminded there's a big gap between good for regular people and elite pro athlete at the top of this sport, you know? And that the weird thing about this is it feels like people are going to go in a little skeptical and being like, are we seriously doing this? Or are we having a glorified sparring match? Are we, did we come to a gentleman's agreement beforehand?
Be the wrong time for that.
It would be the worst possible time to do something. But it's, this is what I keep hearing from people where they're like, if Jake Paul doesn't get horribly knocked out, then this is a fix. Then this is a work in
that's,
some sense.
That's the danger in it, right?
And that is the danger is, because it's a weird situation to go into a fight where you're like, there is exactly one specific result I will accept as real. Anything else is suspect because there's so many different things that can happen in a fight, right? And it's also weird to be like, why would we make a fight if the only thing that we could possibly believe would happen is one guy getting absolutely destroyed? And destroyed in a way that could be damaging to his long-term health. Like, that's the, it's like, if he just beats him a little bit, people will be like, I don't know about this one. Like, they're expecting him to get his head knocked clean off and anything else than that. Yeah. And that is, in fact, the appeal. Because, it's like, to a lot of people, they're like, all right, Jake Paul, you've gotten away with this long enough.
Right. Exactly. You know? That's it right there. You've gotten by with this long enough. The craziest thing about it, right, is we're like, he won't do this. This is the type of thing he won't do. What he's going to do is fight these MMA guys, these older guys. He's going to keep fighting, you know, Tommy Fury or guys like that. Like, he's going to fight guys who he should have an advantage on. But this is that one scenario, right, where you're like, okay, now he's going to go against a dude who's supposed to teach him all the lessons that he hasn't learned yet and change that whole thing. That is the appeal. If you're keeping, if he's keeping, like, how do I always hold the appeal? How do I keep the advantage on appeal? This is what you do. You go against the guy who's supposed to kill
you. You got to turn the volume up, right?
Exactly.
Because like, so, it's like if the stakes just get lower, nobody pays to watch a tightrope walker if the tightrope's 6 inches off the ground. Like, we want to see that there is a chance that you might fall to your death. And this is that tightrope for him. But also, it's like, here's what I wonder. You guys tell me what you think. Does Jake Paul believe he's going to win this fight? In his heart of hearts, in his mind's brain, does he believe that I'm going to go in there and shock the world and beat Anthony?
I think he has told himself yes. And there might be some belief system there that he does. But I think he also looks at it like, hey, business, this is business. Like, this is where you get the, you know, I think his mind is more geared towards that, you know, over the like, I believe in myself so much, my skills this whole time I've been coming, this is what it's all led to. I don't really think that he looks at it like that.
You think he thinks, I'm going to wake up the morning after with no memory of the fight, but with millions and millions of dollars in my account.
Yeah. Oh, man. I said this to the lads during the week. There is, like, do you remember when Dylan last week was at MSG and the boys from Dagestan caved him in? And you're like, like, if this was anyone else, I'd be like, wow, like, this is terrible that this happened to this person. but because it's Dylan, you're like, yeah, well, that was going to happen. The situation with Jake Paul feels like that to me, because he keeps fighting all these guys he was clearly going to beat. Like, every one of them were kind of lured in. And I told you that, pants down on the street, Pete, going, I think this is actually going to be a competitive. And then he fights and it's not. So all of these times that's happened. And now it's Joshua. And as I said, like, the talk in the UK is all about, like, this guy could get really fucked up in there. And that's only, like, titillating most of us, right? Because we're like, what could happen?
And and you have a bunch of people saying, yes, he could, and it's about time.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Like, that's the thing. If it happens to him, I'm not going to be like, oh, no. I'm be like, yeah, that was always the thing we were waiting for.
Okay. Imagine a scenario where you
get really, okay. I want to clarify. I do not want to see Jake Paul getting injured. Like,
yeah, I mean, imagine.
But you wouldn't mind seeing him drink out of a straw, though, or eat out of a straw, whatever Ben said last time.
Well, but I mean, it's a not inconceivable possibility that he does get really badly hurt in this. Like, imagine you can just close your eyes and picture a world where we're looking at headlines that say Jake Paul in critical condition after Anthony Joshua fight, and everybody will kind of go, oh God, what have we done? What have
Isn't this
we
what
been
you wanted,
party
Pacey?
To?
This is
yeah,
what you wanted.
See, exactly. You will be saying that to yourself in the bathroom mirror at 4 o'clock in the morning. We would be like, you asked for this, didn't you? You said you would feel good about it as long as it happened to him. And now here it is. And you'll be on some Lady Macbeth shit trying to scrub the blood off your hands. And it won't feel good.
Yeah.
That won't feel good. So that's the thing is, like, everybody wants to see Jake Paul get horribly knocked out, but then we also want to see him bounce back up and be okay so that we can resume, like, pointing and laughing. But that's a dangerous place to be, honestly.
What do you do with him if he wins? Like, what would you do if, like, he goes
wait a minute, if he wins?
Like, what is next?
You're fucking with me. If that happens, the whole fucking thing is over. The whole thing, right? Like, I am
boxing,
not,
like, as a sport.
No,
is.
The Jake Paul thing, like, it's over. And I think Joshua was all like, this is a crazy thing to say, right? Because I'm only thinking about that happening for spurious reasons. Like, there is no way in my head that Jake Paul can win this fight legitimately.
Like, lands one good punch. Like, what if it's clear, like, where it's just like Anthony Joshua
good, Ben. It wants
is,
to be a
is,
lot better than good.
Is throwing be- hard. He slips it, comes back with a left hook, catches him cleanly. You watch Anthony Joshua's chin snap to one side.
Yeah.
He falls down asleep, just eyes open, staring at nothing. And everybody goes, holy shit, Jake Paul actually, like, even if we come away from that being like, he landed one lucky punch, he could never do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
that'd be wild.
I don't know what you would do. I don't know. What. That's where we would have to
be out there and Blanche on the corner with the headline on the paper, like, the fix is in. The fix is in.
That would be the moment that I start to consider that these people were right and we're all living in a simulation.
Oh my God. Oh, I don't even want to consider it. I don't, like, I mean, this
yeah,
is.
Yeah,
because
he leapfrogged. I was sitting here saying, like, there's no way he would actually fight Francis Ngannou. So what does he do? He goes and fights the dude who knocked Francis Ngannou out. Like, it's such a leap.
It's, as we're having this discussion, New York Rick, who can't speak on the show today due to the legal situation between me and Boys in the Back.
Right.
You know, we're obviously very serious. We're talking about, like, what if this could happen? Like, what if he actually does get hurt? New York Rick has given me permission to say this. Jake Paul died so I can make improvements to my house. Bless him. It's joke. We're in Chester. I will not be one of the what have we done people. Well, there you go, New York Rick, our beautiful producer. What a man. Fantastic stuff. That makes me feel better, because at least when I'm getting publicly stoned for my opinions, Rick will be right there beside me taking those rocks to the face too. Thank you very much, New York Rick.
We can all agree though that this is vastly more, like, if you had no interest in the other one, I mean, like, this one seems to me like, if you're trying to create a must-see vibe for this fight, I think they've done that.
Yeah. Oh, I can't. This is the most interesting by a million miles. Like, it's way more interesting than Tyson. It's way more interesting than anything else. Like, it's and Anderson Silva. I know.
That visual
right there.
You didn't
think
there
was enough good fights in this card, Ben. It's the one you've been waiting for.
Yeah.
Look at him. Like, don't get too excited. I don't know if he saw this because he didn't watch the press conference. Yes. Yes, it's happening, Ben.
It's happening.
Anderson Silva v. Tyron Woodley. Ah, look at that. Oh,
you asked for it. We got it.
He thought this was a one fight card.
Well,
look at him.
Looks like I can go ahead and scratch one thing off my Christmas list early, you know?
I knew he'd love it. I knew he would love that.
And I like how, like, we spent like 15 minutes talking about the Weidman Silva thing before, only to just have that go away, and now we've got bastardization.
I'll tell you what, like, fights like that, I was talking with my daughters the other night about their Christmas wish list, and one of them had wisely cut hers into two categories. One of the categories for gifts she wanted was labeled voluntary. Or no, it was labeled optional.
Okay.
And
the other one's,
like,
mandatory.
The other one was not called mandatory,
okay,
but that's...
It's implied.
She wisely let you draw your own conclusion about that one, since it's not in the optional category. Anything Anderson Silva related boxing on the Jake Paul undercard for me falls in the optional category. We don't necessarily gotta have it, but if you got it, out of curiosity, out of sick curiosity, I will tune in a little bit earlier just to keep an eye on it.
It's like, look, these are, it's just for the B-roll, for these are Jake Paul's conquests, you know? Right.
Your list of Jake Paul's conquests. I mean, the line you pulled out when this was announced, Chuck, absolutely fantastic. I think he's the first guy to have fought
a 57-year-old Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
After fighting Mike Perry, you know.
Is this the high watermark? Like, is there a chance, like, what if, like, say, as we predict, Joshua goes in, knocks him out within three rounds. It's over.
This is like the end of Point Break. Have you guys ever seen that movie? He's going out for the 50-foot wave. Yeah, Bodie, he's going out for the 50-foot wave, and he's like, he ain't coming back. You know,
you're saying that Jake moment. Paul has it in his mind to die doing what he loves.
Yes, I am. I think this is that moment for him. This is the end of the movie.
This show is getting so fucking banned if anything bad happens in that fight. Look at these three assholes. He says the producer even wants it to happen. Oh my God. Hey, lads, all that excitement. I know we could talk about Jake Paul all day. It's Ben Folks' favorite subject and his favorite athlete. But guess what?
You can rewatch the press conference later, man. Go ahead, pizza.
Calm down, Ben, okay? We need to move on here. Rico Verhoeven, a free agent. What the hell is happening here? I felt that man was always going. There's that long piece of text there confirming what I just said. He is, in fact, a free agent. We won't get into the nitty-gritty of what he's just laid out there. Ariel Helwani's had some thoughts about it online. He's kind of saying, is UFC a play here? What? My two cents, a Rico move to MMA would be huge for him and the sport, considering the state of heavyweight MMA. And I think he'd be quite successful. Worth noting, he is a good friend and training partner of Tom Aspinall. That, you know what I mean? They are signing a lot of Tom Aspinall's friends to that heavyweight division, which should be noted. But could we have a little bit more fun here? Like, is there anything else perhaps top of mind for you, Chuck Mendenhall?
I mean, I talked to him maybe 6 months ago. He was getting ready to defend his title in kickboxing. And you got the sense then that he was kind of like, I would love to do other stuff, because he's kind of done everything you can do in that world. He's very famous in Europe, right? Like he was talking about the different, just going to the grocery store, like it being a problem sometimes because people see him. He's a huge star, but like you talk about him over in America and I don't feel like it's ever translated. And I think he feels that a little bit, like that he's like, you know, I think I can compete with these guys. He wanted to do one-offs like against certain MMA guys, maybe one in his realm, one in that realm. But you could tell that he wanted to maybe do something like this. And so it didn't come as a shock to see this. But I do think that, like, we followed the game long enough. You guys have seen him where you're like, I think he's an instant intrigue if he goes, hey, I mean, he's the dude. It's like it's when you get a guy like who's a big time wrestler, a college wrestler. He's already done the weight cuts a million times. He's already done. He's been in the spotlight. He's polished. He can talk. You know, on the microphone, all of that stuff. This guy has done it all. He's fought in front of, you know, huge crowds, way bigger than a lot of times in the UFC. I think it's a pretty intriguing thing, man. Like, I think he's going to go in there and he's still got a lot left in the tank. And if it ends up being in the UFC, that'd be great. But I mean, it was Ariel who was trying to get him against Ngannou, right? Like, if you could do something like that, I mean, that would be a fun fight. Like, I feel like there's plenty of options for the guy.
Yeah. I mean, especially because when, like, the Ngannou one is an interesting one because PFL's big problem is you got Francis Ngannou, who you got for Francis Ngannou to
fight.
Yes.
And you could solve that problem here, at least for the short term, if you were able to sign Rico. Plus, the thing that you could offer him that the UFC can't is, we know how these things can go, where a guy who has a big name outside starts to have free agent type negotiations with the UFC. And they're not always willing to pay the upfront money that guy might expect. And they also want a lot of control. Like, they're not signing you to a one fight deal. They're not bringing you in with the idea that we might have to turn around and negotiate a new deal with you next year. Like, they want to lock you down for a while. They want a lot of control. And guys in his position might feel like, I don't need to give you that control. I'm bringing a lot to the table here. If you're not willing to pony up a whole lot of money right now, why do I need to commit to spending the next several years fighting in the UFC, right, or at least not fighting anywhere else? And so the PFL would be able to probably come in there and say, we can offer you one big fight, one big payday, a big opportunity to do something in MMA, but without having to sign away your entire future over the next few years to us. So like that is an appealing prospect. And I also think it's always interesting when you get a guy, especially big guy, kickboxer, exciting style, and a heavyweight. God knows we need some heavyweights around here.
Oh, yeah.
So he brings a lot that I think the UFC should want to get. It also seems, though, that the last few years, the UFC has gotten to a point where they're like, we don't need any one fighter. I mean, otherwise, you wouldn't have let Francis Ngannou walk in the first place. They're just kind of going like, the brand is the power at this point. We don't have to go out and sign anybody. So if they make it too difficult on us, we go, fine, whatever. But I think the UFC would have some interesting work for him to do. I also, though, would point out, remember the cautionary tale of Gokhan Saki. Yes. Remember when he came in and we got kind of excited about it, and then it turned out, maybe not.
Right. Yeah. It's true.
Do you expect that the UFC will front up the cash, though? Like, I mean, this is a guy who's been fighting for big paydays. Like, he, as Chuck said, like, he is really famous, like really, really famous in the kind of in Holland. Like, he is like a bona fide celebrated athlete. Do you expect
starring in movies and all kinds of stuff? Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Do you think they'll pony up, basically? Like, because we've seen this so many times. Like, even, I know it's completely different, but Phil DeFreeze, who's like on this wild winning streak with KSW, he was offered 10 and 10 to come to the
Jesus.
UFC. When he was like a free agent, he was like, yeah, they offered me an entry level deal. Like, do you want That's 10 insane. And 10? If not, fuck off. So do you think they'll actually front up and give Rico the kind of money that he would be looking for? Ben.
Well, no. Probably is the short answer.
No.
Just because it's the tricky thing about it is, like I said, for them, they don't feel like they need any one guy right now. But also, you take a really good kickboxer like that, and in MMA and to MMA people's minds, he still would just be sort of an MMA prospect in a weird way. We would be like, will this work out?
Right.
Will he just come in there? And depending on what matchup you give him, we'll be reminded that these are different sports.
Or like a novelty. You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, because it's like, what do? Does he come in and fight for a title right away? You know, almost certainly not. So then what, he comes in and we fight either a hand-picked heavyweight, or we do the other direction and we intentionally pick somebody, go in there and take him down just so we can make a point about MMA's dominance. You know, we put him up in there against somebody from the Caucasus regions with the Abe Lincoln beard who's going to take him down and feet and elbows, you know?
Like, the Abe Lincoln beard!
Otherwise, because it's kind of like, what would you do, right? You come in and are you hoping he can beat one guy, beat one or two guys, and then we can build to a title shot? Because we've seen that go way wrong. And I just think that if I were PFL, I'd be feeling like this is our chance. Like, if we really want to get Francis Ngannou back in the cage and back in there with something that people will regard as worth doing, you could make that fight. And you could also use that as a case to make to Rico Verhoeven, like, hey, do you want to sign like a 3-year or like, you know, 8-fight deal or something with the UFC where you're going to be out there wearing the Venom kit and they're going to be giving you $2,500, you know? There's a lot of that kind of stuff that like the UFC has such a like a stricture around it. And you take a guy like that, he's probably not going to be used to that. He's probably not going to be looking for that at this point in his career.
Yeah. Poor fucker have Walter Walker swinging out of his heels. Look for a second and what the fuck is this? Jesus Christ. What else have we got here, boys? On the theme of boxing, David Benavidez v. Anthony Yard is tomorrow in Riyadh, which is going to compete, I'm sorry to say, with the Montana v. Montana State game. And
there's no competing with it. There's no competing.
Well, it'll be on the same time. And UFC Doha. I mean, it's all going on.
The only Yards Ben's going to be watching is first down Yards.
His grills are picking up. Oh, God. Chuck Ben and all. That's a classic. And listen, Elliot Wurzel has a fantastic piece out about Anthony Yard. If you need to get yourself in the mood for this fight, get over there and read that. It's a brilliant piece about Yard's relationship with loss. Not only in the ring, but outside of the ring. David Benavidez, an absolute blue chip prospect, an absolute savage. It's going to be a brilliant fight. And finally, PFL, they rolled out their big schedule and the lightweight belt. The man who holds that, his name is Usman Nurmagomedov. He'll be taking on UK's Alfie Davis on February 7th. They did the rollout there last week. Usman getting mad love in Doha. He's traveled with the Nurmagomedovs over there. So that looks like a fight that will be very appealing to the masses. They've also announced PFL Madrid, which I'm very excited about. I might have to just jump over there, you know, to make sure.
Strictly for the fights. Madrid's nothing to see there.
I mean, I heard it's a shithole, but I'll go over. And I'm joking, of course. Madrid, beautiful. But I'm just going to imagine.
He's going to have his pants down in the streets of Madrid.
Let's get to the chafing story. So what happened is.
Thank you.
My cardiovascular capability is very limited. It's bad, to be honest. You know, I have to get out for these constitutionals to make sure the blood is still flowing to my legs every now and again. So I get out for a little. I'm out for a run. And, you know, I'm not going fast. I never go fast. I cannot go fast. But I'm out for about, you know, an hour, come back, get in the shower. As I'm showering, there's a stinging sensation from the ass region. Mm. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, have I got hemorrhoids? Like, what is going on? On closer inspection, it turns out to be a chafed ass. So both of the cheeks like this, okay, as I'm running, and I have a hairy bottom. So I think that didn't help too. Hair is hard down there. You know what I mean? It's no soft ass hair. This is some hard hair. And I'm like this the whole way down. And I said to Elaine, I think I had a chafe on my arse. And she was like, is that a thing? And I was like, yeah, no, I think I've chafed my arse. And she's like, I don't know if that's a thing. So what I did was, and the lad's quick to tell me that I didn't realize what I was saying when I mentioned this. But so I put into to Google, I will tell you now because I had it open seconds before the show. This is what I put into Google. I said, ass chafe after running, which led me to a Reddit page. And within the Reddit page, it said, which I explained to the lads that this is very simple. You know, you've just got to vase your ass up before you get out there. You go from taint to tailbone with the Vaseline to make sure this doesn't happen. And I was like, lads, you know, the guy said, if you just write ass on the Vaseline, nobody will ever touch it. And it was only then, when Ben reacted the way he did, that I realized that, yes, in fact, everyone would be very, very concerned about my Vaseline tub with ass written on it in the bathroom.
You could just write, do not touch. You know, something like that. Pete's Vaseline, do not touch.
Yeah.
It's just such an interesting series of choices that you made to get to this point.
What else could asses and Vaseline be used for? Everybody, like,
I don't know.
This is clearly Pete's running lotion. That's what they
I
say.
Also, I want to take us like a moment to appreciate this sort of close, intimate relationship that Pete shares with Elaine, where he feels comfortable just being like, hey, I chaffed my ass. Like, let's talk about it. You know, like just. Yeah. He doesn't think to himself, maybe Pete C should try to make this Pete C's problem and just solve it on my own and not say anything to her, not force her to confront this, like what kind of animal she's dealing with here in her home every single day. No, he's just like, you know what? This is something I'm going through. Let me bring it to Elaine, see if she has anything she can offer. You know, it's a beautiful thing in its own way.
It's a beautiful holiday story, you know?
Just don't go from taint to tailbone and everything will be okay. You know what I mean?
It's one of those
viewers, taint to the tailbone. Viewers of this show who stuck around because of the promise of being able to hear this story, are you happy with your decision?
I'd say they are.
This is what you get. This is, I don't know what you expected was going to happen, but this is what you get.
Happy Thanksgiving.
So if you're in my house and you see a tub of Vaseline that says ass on it, it's not what you think it is, okay? Yeah. It's a running situation where I have to put my hand in the ass Vaseline and go taint to tailbone to make sure. And you know what? Sometimes, you know, I might need to go on the nips too. You know, your nipples, you know, when you're running, they can get aggressive too. You know, you need to make sure that they are protected.
The other thing about the whole idea of writing ass on the jar of Vaseline is the idea, right, is that I don't want somebody to come along, see this jar of Vaseline and be like, oh, this would be good, you know, to use in lieu of chapstick or something. Because
balm.
It's
yes,
like, yeah.
Please, yeah.
And the situation is, I don't know how many people are living in that house. My understanding is it's kind of just you and Elaine, right? So you could just tell her, hey, if you see this, this is what's going on here. You know, maybe don't use it. Like, it's not a situation where you're going to have a party. People are going to be over. And they're going to be like, well, naturally, you know, you're in somebody's house for a party. You use their hand soap to wash your hands. You understand that that's a given. You see a jar of Vaseline in their medicine cabinet. You think, hey, of course I'm going to use a stranger's Vaseline. Like everybody, like, no, that's not going to happen, man.
Vaseline.
Probably going to be okay here just having this conversation with Elaine, which I was thinking the reason you weren't doing that is due to embarrassment, but that's clearly out the window now. You know, you already said that.
No.
I just didn't say it out loud till I said it to you guys. And then, well, I did with the chafed ass. I just hadn't mentioned the ass Vaseline at that point.
And this is what we talk about 5 minutes before the show, by the way, just for the people at home who are like, well, you know, where did this come from? This is the conversation we're having. I said, save it for the show. Right. So here we are.
Right up until the music drops. It's conversations.
I'm glad that I told them, and I'm glad that we can all share here. That's what the crack is all about.
That's what it's about.
The crack.
The crack. You know, quite literally, like the crack.
That's what that is the muse of the whole show. Rick, do we have any super chats? Oh, Rick's texting here. You might have told me you're fired.
we cut this off 15 minutes ago.
It says no super chats because I'm not in Google/YouTube. I don't know what that means. The fuckers, he added. It should be said. I didn't say that. The flippers, I would have said because I don't swear.
Right after his whole conversation about his ass crack. Okay.
Listen, ass is not a bad word. So please accept my ass story in lieu of the super chats. And we aren't going to be here next week because it's Thanksgiving, which is one of you tell me what Thanksgiving is all about again. What is that?
Eating food.
That's right.
Eating food. Yeah.
From what I understand.
American football, NFL, baby. That's going to happen. I'll be watching that. So we're going to be away for a week. So I guess the lasting image you're going to have is me going taint to tailbone. I can only apologize.
There's going to be some super chats about this in the future. I can tell you that right now.
Listen, any of you guys thinking about going for a jog tonight, don't go out there bare. Go taint to tailbone with a bit of Vaseline, and we will see you in 2 weeks' time. We cannot wait for that. We love you so much. Thank you to New York, Rick, who cannot provide us with the super chats. We hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we hope you enjoy the fight. Actually, whoa, tomorrow there's going to be a post show. Well, how did I forget this? Me, Chuck, and Ariel, we're going to be on there. You know, this guy, folks, too busy celebrating Montana's big win over Montana State, the Grizz, baby. We'll be here. We'll be talking about who the new number one contenders in both lightweight and welterweight are. But until then, you go and enjoy yourself. Taint to tailbone. We will see you in 2 weeks' time. Mwah.
Dun, 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 dun.